Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning and welcome to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. I believe at the moment the website is down, but it all being well, it should be back and the podcast should be available so you can listen at your leisure. Saturday the 14th of December 2024 if you're listening on catch up. You've got Julian Paul here live. Later in the show we'll be talking to RPG this week, and indeed every second Saturday of the month our guest speaker is Dr. Ogo Osamo. He's going to be talking about solar paints and Mercedes-Benz, all interesting stuff. Next week, all being well, and indeed every third Saturday of the month, it's Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society. He'll be talking about gift ideas. And on that note as well, worth mentioning that Sheffield Photographic Society is opening up their annual competition, I think, to members of the public. So if you follow them on Facebook, you'll check out all the details there, or check out sheffieldphotosociety.org.uk. Christmas doesn't stop us here at Sheffield Live, so every fourth Saturday of the month our guest speaker is Chris Dale. So on the 28th of December he'll be coming in to talk about, not to be agreed yet, but it's going to be about ultra-processed food and possibly if impact on dental health as well. But on that note, RPG was talking the other week about a book called Ultra Processed People by Chris Van Tulliken, and it's says why do we all eat stuff that isn't food and why can't we stop? And it says it's a fascinating but horrifying investigation into our industrialised food system. Ultra-processed food is anything you couldn't make in a normal home kitchen with ingredients that look more like a scientific formula. Now, Chris Van Tulliken, an infectious diseases doctor, refuses to even call them food. They are industrially produced edible substances. And as he says, and we quite rightly know, they are everywhere. Ready meals, cereals, crisps, ice cream, even in bread. And they're addictive. It will change the way you eat. all very interesting. So next up, this is a fantastic story. I'm a member of the RHS, Royal Horticultural Society, which means you get a magazine monthly. And they're really up in the game, I think, the RHS, trying to get younger people involved. Well, I saw this article by a guest columnist called Oliver Spacey. He's a PhD student in environmental research at Oxford University. He was the guest columnist in the December 2024 edition of the RHS magazine. And this is the article, and it's all about mistletoe, and it's absolutely fascinating. So he says, I love parasites. They're fascinating. An organism or species that needs another living thing to survive has a really interesting way of doing life. They face challenges that free living organisms don't, such as overcoming their host defences and finding ways to transmit between hosts that might not be close by. He says, my favourite parasite has to be mistletoe, not just because it's Christmas, but because I'm dedicating 4 years of my life to a PhD programme on it, kindly supported by the Tree Council, which is the leading charity behind National Tree Week. Now, Oliver Spacey says, unlike ivy, which just uses trees for structural support, mistletoe actually invades a tree's tissue and grows within it, helping itself to a constant supply of nutrients and water. It even steals some carbon from its host tree, despite being able to create this itself via photosynthesis. Now, whether the mistletoe steals more from an apple tree than a poplar tree, for example, is just one area of Oliver Spacey's research. And how this fascinating species will adapt to a warming climate is another. The latter might also hold clues about how parasites in general will respond to climate change. And he says, with the loss of many apple orchards across the UK, mistletoe had been predicted to go into decline. But following the first winter of the survey, in which more than 1,000 people across the UK sent details of location and abundance of mistletoe in gardens and parks, it's clear mistletoe is doing just fine. Oliver got the records from every country of the UK, and it was found even as far north as Edinburgh. And he says, this is interesting because while it's a hardy, mistletoe is harder, it doesn't fare well in climates that dip below -7 degrees in winter. So is it moving north as the climate warms? Well, he says it's too early to tell. And he also says many people assume mistletoe only grows on apple trees and they are a favourite host for mistletoe, but there are records of it growing on 230 different species of flowering trees, many from the rose family, in fact. Limes are also a favourite and often have massive infestations. And he says, cider farmers, I know what you're thinking. And yes, mistletoe can be a pest if it's allowed to run rampant. But he argues its wider impact on the ecosystem balances out the bad if managed properly. He says mistletoe is a keystone species. An ecosystem relies on it for food and habitat, so it's very good for biodiversity. It has a mutualistic relationship with birds. Mistle thrushes spread seeds through droppings, while black caps consume only the berry and wipe the seed onto other tree branches. Mistletoe also houses 6 insect species, including a species of marble moth whose larvae are only found on the mistletoe plant. Now, he says a lot of work has been done in Australia, where there are many native mistletoes, to find out how they can impact the wider ecosystem by reducing the vigour of the trees they're growing on. He says, I'll be continuing to piece together the mistletoe jigsaw until 2026. And he's saying, I love UK-based Royal Horticultural Society members to get in touch and tell me where they're seed growing, how much and on what. And remember, mistletoe isn't just for Christmas. It's a fascinating, important member of our flora all year round. Now, of course, it's not just RHS members that you can get involved. Anyone can get involved. And if you want to contribute to Oliver Spacey's PhD research, he's a research student at the University of Oxford, go to treecouncil.org.uk/mistletoe. And it's called Oliver's Mistle Go in capitals survey. Fantastic stuff. Interesting track there, Da Bomb, or The Tree by Faust from 1973. We played that because we're talking about mistletoe and the research that Oliver Spacey's doing, Oxford University student, PhD student. You can contribute to his survey on mistletoe, the Mistletoe Go survey, by visiting treecouncil.org.uk/mistletoe. All exciting stuff. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're here every Saturday morning live between 11 and 12 talking about science in all its different forms. Next up, this week's environment update.
Yes, low-carbon renewable energy. Earlier this week, the energy think tank Ember reported that 2024 is set to be the first full year in which low-carbon renewable energy provided more UK electricity than fossil fuels. Wind, solar and hydropower are projected to generate 37% of our power this year, about 103 terawatt hours, that's TWH, overtaking fossil fuels, which are expected to provide 35% or 97 terawatt hours. Biomass, which is sometimes considered a renewable energy source, has been excluded from the calculation due to its emissions.
Interesting. Next up, how environmentally friendly is your diet? A very good question. You may think you know roughly how good your diet is for the environment, but recent research suggests our assumptions may be misplaced. Oat milk and vegetarian sausages, for example, have been found to have fewer benefits for the climate than unprocessed foods such as peas and beans. Very interesting.
Now then, climate leave. Workers in Spain will be given up to 4 days of paid climate leave in the event of extreme weather. The new rights were approved by the country's Council of Ministers following October's catastrophic flooding in Valencia.
All interesting, eh? Urban agriculture. A Dutch suburb has laid down rules in which residents must grow food on at least half of their property. The 5,000 inhabitants of Oosterwold, east of Amsterdam, are taking part in a living experiment in urban agriculture in an effort to achieve self-sufficiency. Very interesting indeed.
Carbon-free commuting. Uber, bought by Thames Clipper, has unveiled the Orbit Clipper, its first fully electric cross-river passenger ferry. The service, which will launch in March 2025, has been designed to carry more than 20,000 passengers every day between Canary Wharf and the Rotherhithe.
Right, and finally, from the ashes, scientists have discovered a treasure trove of rare earth elements in the ash left over from burning coal. Researchers from the University of Texas Austin estimate there could be 11 million tons of rare elements worth around $8.4 billion. In spent coal ash from US power plants. The discovery could limit the need for new mining of elements such as scandium and lanthanides
well
required
done.
For electric car batteries, and that's the joy of live radio.
Yes, here we go.
It's true. They got a message from the Action Man. I'm happy. Hope you're happy too. I've loved all of needed love. Saw the details fall away. The shrieking of nothing is killing. Just pictures of chapters and synthesis.
wonder. I ain't got no money and I ain't got no hands. But I'm hoping to kick with the planet is glowing. Ashes to ash and fun to fuck it. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's mind.
Another great song, eh? Ashes to Ashes, yes. By David Bowie, 1980, can you believe? And played about just talking about from the ashes, there may be rare earth elements in burnt ash. All exciting stuff. Just tuned in, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, and we should have our PG on the line. Morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning. And
morning.
Blooming hell, 14th of December.
I know, and then there's a strange sort of bright object up in the sky this day.
Is it called the sun? Yeah, I know. It has been rather miserable, hasn't it? So what's caught your eye in the science news then in this run-up to Christmas?
Well, something that I think you guys might find interesting, and perhaps Ogo will as well, the University of Sheffield are part of the Healthy Lifespan Institute, and they've done some research, or they've picked up on some research that reveals a link between air pollution and water quality and people having multiple long-term chronic conditions. So they identified this link in a study of Serbian people. I think there was something like 15,000 people from a very carefully chosen, stratified sort of group to look at this, people from 15 to very old age. But it's a collaborative study that examined how air pollution and water quality in the Serbian population are linked to people having multimorbidity. So that's multiple long-term chronic conditions. And they said that it's the presence of two or more conditions that create this disability and poor quality of life in old age. So in 2023, there was a study that looked at morbidity and said that overall it was at 37.2%. But they didn't quite understand what was pushing this multimorbidity, and it was a very complex sort of mechanism that wasn't very well understood. So this new research has examined this large group from Serbia and found that the overall prevalence of multimorbidity in Serbia was 33.4%, with health problems grouped into six main categories. That's general health problems, heart problems, diabetes, related problems, lung problems, muscle and bone problems. So pretty pervasive sort of range of things. And they showed that it was linked with the higher levels of tiny particles, PM10, and sulfur dioxide, which made people more likely to have multi-morbidity. Additionally, people exposed to polluted water, whether biochemical pollution, biological pollution, or both, were also more likely to have multi-morbidity. So having a look at your sort of world surroundings, you can see the impacts that things are having, and it goes through the whole sort of change, I think, in approach to things like traffic, generating our power and energy, and another surprising thing. So Professor Lydie Goyer, the Professor of Public Health and a member of the Healthy Lifespan Institute at the University of Sheffield, has worked on this study as Professor Ilaria Bellatuoni, who's a professor of musculoskeletal aging. Sheffield University, again, something very interesting, I think, to say you guys probably know a lot about it, but starting to pull those threads together, because sometimes it's difficult to actually see what's happening and the impact. So,
yeah, it's an interesting one. Oh, Ogo would know better than I, but when we used to talk about air pollution, certain communities would be more vulnerable to that similar thing, because it was called triple jeopardy. You were likely to live in a poor area, be exposed to more traffic pollution, and you possibly would have lower income, not a good diet. You know, you might smoke more. You might have more problems with your dental health and all sorts of issues that combine together.
Yeah, well, I think, again, Sheffield University did the thing about areas of the city, depending on wealth and various other things that had impacts upon health. So some great studies sort of around, and maybe a reminder. And the other thing that caught my attention, because I had a nasty cold, as you probably remember.
Yes.
And, NHS say that they're facing what they're calling a quademic. There are four things, which is the levels of flu, COVID, winter vomiting bugs, and respiratory breathing illnesses. So they're asking people to look at facing up. And one of the things which looks like it's forgotten by a lot of people is hand washing. Because the norovirus, the nasty thing that gives you winter vomiting disease, is not affected by the kind of gels and things that we used in COVID. It's soap and water that's much more effective against norovirus. And again, just travelling around the city, if you look on public transport, people close the windows, they're all sitting around, don't want to get a draft on themselves, but it's a perfect transmission area for disease.
Warm, nice and warm, and damp.
So I think it's one of those, you know, just be aware when you're going out. You know, the sight of a person in a mask is becoming a rarity again. Don't be afraid to wear a mask. Certainly, I think, as things get a bit busier with shopping and preparations towards Christmas, just have a thought, because nothing worse than having your Christmas ruined by one of those diseases.
No, I know. It's an interesting one about the hand washing, Paul, because an infectious nurse's disease, she's now retired, said even against COVID, the most powerful thing was that hand washing with the soap and water, just because it breaks down the actual coating of the virus.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why I mention it, because it you know, I think you get the joyful sort of release from COVID, or so we thought, and a lot of people just sort of drop back into old habits, and say, we've talked about this before, well, I've talked about it before, people not having handkerchiefs or tissues, embarking openly in those sort of public transport and public places. You know, it just seems that, I don't know, it feels like some people take a pride in having a loud cough and snort, rather than thinking that they should do something about catching it.
Oh, I still thought, most people, I think, if anybody coughs or sneezes, that everybody's like, whoa, that's hangover from
run
COVID.
To the hills.
Yeah. Well, I think it's it's not that long ago, but I think a lot of people are losing those lessons. So, you know, regular hand washing, I think when you're going on a journey, if you're going to and from somewhere, if there's a chance to wash your hands, give them a clean with soap and water, and you're going to help avoid, if you can, catching something that, let's say, could really make a mess of your Christmas.
Yeah, it could indeed.
So I think... really, it's just those four things. I think the problem is that sort of respiratory diseases covers a lot of ills. And having sort of recently had this cold which carried on, I don't believe what I had was flu. It seemed like cold, and it certainly seemed from my local farmer that it was a cold. But a cough, occasionally having a headache, feeling generally sort of run down with a sort of back. But hey, you know, if you've got COVID, guess what? Same sort of things apply.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. And as people are probably aware now, you don't get the free test packages through the door unless you're particularly in a group that's at risk. So... I'd go out and buy a set of tests, which cost £10 for six tests.
Oh, right, okay.
So people aren't testing.
No, no.
So again, because the conditions got so many similarities, it's just being passed around.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is difficult to know, isn't it? And even if you feel as though you've got what you think are COVID symptoms and you test... It isn't, is it? Maybe because the test is not picking up the latest variants of that disease.
That's right. And again, you know, we've stopped monitoring, we've stopped reporting COVID. So I think it's down to, I think across the country, there are something like 60 through to 90% bed occupancy with flu cases or similar. You know, it really is ramping up the pressure on the NHS. And don't forget, that's bypassing all the other normal things that they have to deal with.
Yes.
Yes. We're back to the arguments about, you know, can you put off a cancer patient because somebody's got cold, flu, COVID? it's really not a great place to be in, and I think an individual contribution to that is to be wary about what you're doing. Don't be frightened to get some fresh air around when you move about. And if you use soap and water, wash your hands regularly, you'll start to reduce that risk of transmission.
Yeah, all good stuff. And stay away from your Christmas parties. This is one of the worst places.
Yeah. I'll finish on
or something happy.
one big up, which is for scientists, and that's a Young Scientist Award for Jasmine Notarangelo, who's the winner of the 2024 Young Scientist of the Year Award. And her award-winning essay is all about the pressing global health issues that affect her family directly. And that is, she's a teenager whose mum and grandmum both have type 1 diabetes. So she does a very, very good detailed essay talking about it's a disease which can't be cured, only managed. It's an autoimmune condition, meaning the body's defense system attacks cells in the pancreas. Once those cells are damaged, they can't produce insulin. And that's the hormone which keeps blood sugar levels within a safe range. So it's on the BBC website if you want to go and have a look and actually read it. But it is a very interesting essay that she's produced. She talks about the insulin pump, which is a small device about the size of a deck of cards, which can supply a continuous flow
Oh, I think we've lost you, Paul.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, you're back. You're back. I think.
No, we've lost him.
Oh, I think we've lost you, Paul. Oh.
Where are you?
Are you there? This is the joy of live radio, eh?
Okay.
Oh. Your signal's just gone, that's all, Paul. Oh, I think we might have to say goodbye to you, Paul. Merry Christmas anyway, Paul, and we shall speak to you Monday on Glory Days Rock Show 1 till 3. Bye-bye, Paul. Bye. Sooner than expected.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're saying, I love you. I hear babies cry.
Beautiful track there. Wonderful word by Louis Armstrong. Not written by him. It was Sam Cooke, partly written by him. Somebody else. Wow. I can't quite remember who now. I think that was from 1968. He chose that track because he wanted to finish on a high, and we're afraid we lost him. The signal went. But he was talking about the Young Scientist of the Year Award 2024. Check it out on the BBC website, all about type 1 diabetes. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire. Or SheffieldLive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every week. We should have Dr. Ogo Osomo on the line. Good morning, Ogo, sir.
Good morning, Julie. How are you today?
Very well indeed. Ogo, thank you so much for joining us in the run-up to Christmas. It's a busy time.
Indeed, very busy time.
You're always busy, aren't you, to be fair?
You are right.
I know, it's all good.
I've just come out of preparing an event to do the interview.
Amazing. Thank you, Ogo. For people who don't know who you are, we used to work together in the air quality team at Sheffield City Council.
That's correct.
Fascinating stuff. So generally we talk about air pollution, but this is another thing it is related to, air quality, I guess. We're going to talk about solar paint, because Mercedes-Benz seems their researchers and scientists have come up with rather a good idea.
That's correct. Mercedes-Benz is trialing a compound called silicon. Well, it's actually two compounds combined. Silicon perovskite. Silicon we're familiar with in terms of solar panels. Silicon is the base element that allows electricity generation when the sun hits the panel.
Ah, yeah.
So essentially, silicon then, the electrons inside the silicon, when they absorb solar energy, move out of their shell, you know, the layers they're in, and become conductive. You know, they produce the electrons that become electricity that we are familiar with.
Wow.
Now, The efficiency of silicon, however, appears to be limited to about 29% efficiency. In other words, if you compare how much electricity is produced when sun hits the panel, that's how you get your efficiency calculation.
Wow.
The amount of electricity you generate depends on the intensity of solar energy hitting the panel.
Yeah.
Now, what Mercedes-Benz has found is that when they combine silicon, in other words, if you layer on a panel with silicon to begin with, if you then put on it this material called perovskite.
I've never heard of that. Perovskite. Yeah.
It's actually a calcium titanium.
Is it?
Material, yes. What that does, it actually enhances the amount of electricity that's generated.
Wow.
And this is what Mercedes-Benz is exploring quite, intensely. They're looking to prepare material that they can use, they can coat over a car, such that as the car is exposed to sunlight, it generates electricity with which you can drive that electric car, or it can go into storage within the battery of the car. That's what Mercedes-Benz is working on.
It's quite, to me, that's a game changer.
It would be a game changer because charging could actually become redundant.
It's an interesting...
In the sense of having chargers and so on, if you have those types of vehicles. So it's their ability to exploit the combination of silicon as we know it for solar panels and perovskite, which has the properties of increase in the amount of electricity that can be generated.
I mean, I've never heard of perovskite. So why has nobody else thought of this then before, may I ask? Do you know?
Well, people have. It's just things develop. So people try out different things. I mean, perovskite is pretty stable material. It's a mineral. And as we know, minerals are naturally occurring what's called inorganic substances. Minerals, they have specific chemical composition. And in this case, it's calcium, titanium, and oxygen that's composed, that's perovskite is made of. You can have different types of perovskites as well, where sulfides and chlorides are involved. But yes, it's a material that is known within the semiconductor, field. But this is the first time, because it obviously it's made this news, people are getting to hear about it. But silicon is far more stable. In fact, in the solar panel semiconductor industry, silicon occupies about over 80-90% of that. Yeah. There are other chemicals as well that are in the background, but a lot is not said about them because of their stability when put outside,
in the real world.
It's
an interesting one. It's interesting for a lot of reasons because, as you're saying, it's developed from a mineral base. So the company is saying the paint contains no rare earth metals, materials, no silicon. It says no silicon. And it's made from inexpensive, non-toxic ingredients that are easy to recycle.
That's correct, yes. As I say, the basic atoms in the mineral are calcium, titanium, and oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. They're also They're also saying that the car will even charge when it's not driving. So you know, that's if it's at home.
Yeah, if it's at home and it's exposed to sunlight.
Yes.
Then its semiconductor properties kick in. A semiconductor really operates depending on the conditions it's under. So a semiconductor means when the condition, such as sunlight, is right, then it will generate electricity. But if there's no light, you don't get the ability of the conductor to generate electricity. So it becomes an insulating material then.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what semiconductors do.
Fascinating.
They are semiconductors because they're able to generate electricity under the right conditions. But some semiconductors, for example, used in the televisions and mobile phones and stuff, when you put electricity through them, they then behave, you know, they start performing. That's the conditions for those types of semiconductors.
Yeah.
Whereas with solar panels, it's actually sunlight. The energy comes from sunlight.
Yeah. They are saying that if you live in a sunnier climate, it's going to work even better, because they're saying you could actually get quite a lot of charge potentially out of it. I think they've said in Stuttgart, where the companies, Mercedes-Benz, have got their company's hometown, saying about they reckon they can do 62% of the energy needed.
That's
for an average
right.
day, which is, you know, we talked about electric vehicles and the way, moving away from fossil fuels and all this, and how difficult it is, and you're having to recharge your battery. When I read it, I thought, wow, if they get, can you imagine the patent on it, Ogo?
They'll
be worth a fortune, won't they?
It would be.
Because, am I right in thinking that they don't have to limit it to cars and vehicles? Couldn't they paint the stuff on buildings and bus stops and whatever?
That's right. That's correct. It doesn't have to be limited to cars.
No.
If you remember, with solar panels, you started off with having them on buildings.
Yes.
And if you recall, when we worked together, we actually secured some funding to be able to install solar panels on ambulances.
Yes.
You know, the paramedics vehicles.
I do.
And allow it, you know, have additional charge from solar panels. That was, you know, something that we were able to secure funding for.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
But, you know, as you rightly said, this can be applied elsewhere as well. You know, in properties, caravans, you name it.
Yeah.
It just, people's imagination and ability to make it happen.
It is, and I thought that why it was fascinating. And it made me think of, because we have worked together a very long time, of the titanium dioxide paint issue. And I thought, oh, wow, it just sounds like that.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, again, it's the same concept of electron jump when a material absorbs light. Now, in terms of that titanium dioxide paint, what it was able to do, or what it is able to do, is actually to cause the breakdown of high boiling materials, you know, organic materials that fall on the surface. So when sunlight hits them, the electrons are animated or, you know, agitated, and they cause the oxidation of, because it's titanium dioxide, they cause oxidation of organic materials. So that way you get rid of organic materials, but also it's able to absorb nitrogen dioxide and convert it into nitrogen and so on. So in that sense, it has been used as a way of getting rid of nitrogen dioxide in the air.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Professor Ryan, you'll have to forgive me that I've forgotten the second name.
There's a lot of professors we worked with at the universities. I don't blame you, although I can't remember either. But
he used to infuse them in textile material, in jeans.
Yes.
And the idea was, as you walk around, your jeans doped with titanium dioxide, you're able to clean up the air.
Yes.
You see, so those were ideas and concepts that were actually explored and pushed.
Yeah, well, because research, you know, we often talk about a lot of research that the universities in Sheffield do, because they're often researching things that they can then apply in the real world.
Yes.
And the game changing, aren't they? So was it Professor Tony Ryan? Does that about right, doesn't it? Sorry, Professor Ryan, if you're listening, but yeah, we might have forgotten your name. It might have been, if my brain remembers. But I remember them wanting to roll it out into not just for jeans. They wanted to make clothing completely out of it, didn't they? Or
that's
coat
correct.
It.
They actually did. Wow. When he worked with London University, there's a department in London University he worked with.
Yeah.
Tony Ryan, yes, that's right, Professor Ryan.
Yeah, and didn't we, well, because it's all about removing, using the titanium dioxide paint to absorb basically air pollution, so you're trying to absorb nitrogen dioxide gas, so you're trying to break it down, aren't you?
That's correct, yes.
Did if my memory recalls correctly, did we not, when IKEA was built in the Don Valley, wasn't the idea we were going to paint that, or was it Tinsley, something at Tinsley we might have been painting with that paint?
Yes, that's correct. There's a company that produced the titanium dioxide, you know, Sol, S-O-L, meaning, you know, it's a liquid anyway. They painted on the wall, and the idea was, this was the Tinsley School, former Tinsley School.
Yeah.
They coated the whole area with titanium dioxide Sol and monitored the levels of nitrogen dioxide, you know, in the air within the compound of the school to see how much of it, you know, how much change there was in concentration over time. And the exposure was done for over 9 months. I haven't seen the report that they did following that study. But, it's something I can look up, you know, and see if it's available. Since I left, they may have contacted. I'll ask the current
It's interesting. It's interesting, though, because it's a brilliant way of science trying to solve real-world issues. Yeah. And Tinsley, obviously chosen Tinsley because it did suffer a lot from air pollution because it's near the motorway.
Arising from the motorway. And, you know, local transport as well.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, because of our knowledge of what was happening there, the relocation of the school, to its new site now, definitely proved to be the case that the levels of exposure to nitrogen dioxide by the school and the young people actually improved just by shifting people away, you know, from proximity to the source.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, road transport, motorway transport.
So what an achievement, because the school originally was really, really close, wasn't it, to the motorway?
Yes,
yeah,
it was, and also properties as well.
Yeah, you know, people living there. So it's all about exposure. It's interesting because earlier on in the show, Paul Gregory was talking about the University of Sheffield doing a healthy lifespan institute and the work they're doing to look at the impact on people's life based on the exposure to air pollution, water pollution, water quality, and seeing what happens with their overall health. And I was saying, and I don't know if you remember, Ogo, because I'm catching you off guard here, but when we worked in air quality, there was a saying called triple jeopardy. I think it was triple jeopardy that said if you were exposed to air pollution, you were likely, potentially, to be more likely to be in a deprived area, possibly, and therefore your diet wouldn't possibly be as good. And you may smoke more, and and your dental health may not be as good. And I'm pretty sure I always remember it being called triple jeopardy.
Yeah, it's triple jeopardy.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's an interesting one about the whole everything to do with your life and your health, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, human beings are a composition of chemicals.
We are. I know.
We don't often want to think about it that way, but that's the truth.
Do you know, the interesting thing is we've been watching Digging for Britain with Professor Alex Roberts. It's fascinating, you know, digging up remains of Roman temples or whatever. I didn't realise when you look at children's teeth that actually you can tell from the teeth where that child was from, because the teeth will tell you what they ate in their formative years.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. I think it must be to do with your age. It's something that sticks in. But who knew, you know, that you could tell things like that?
That's interesting.
We are fascinating creatures, aren't we?
We are indeed.
I know. Amazing stuff, Ogo. We could talk for hours about all this, but isn't it interesting? Titanium dioxide paint then comes to doing this Mercedes paint, and what I realise is the word titanium features in both.
Right, because titanium is a transition metal. Now, there are three. They're highly involved in catalysis.
Oh.
So there's titanium, there's vanadium, and there's nickel. Those three transition elements or metals are used in industry quite widely in industry for catalysis. You know,
which means it's a catalyst to create a reaction, isn't it?
That's right. What catalysts do, they help to speed up or slow down a reaction that will normally take place. So, for example, if you want to polymerize, if you want to produce polyethylene or polypropylene, it's a reaction that can take place, but the condition sometimes is requires high temperature.
Ah.
But with a catalyst, it does two things. It reduces the temperature at which you can polymerize ethylene, which is a monomer. Again, we're moving into other aspects of chemistry, or propylene. It reduces the temperature, but also speeds up the reaction rate.
Yes.
So if, for example, at, say, 800 degrees centigrade, you can cause ethylene to polymerize, so you might be producing, say, 1 gram every 2 minutes. When you put in a catalyst, you reduce the temperature down to about 100 degrees centigrade. But instead of producing 2 grams every minute, you'll be producing 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 grams a minute. So a catalyst in itself doesn't actually change chemically, shouldn't, but the physical nature might change, but the composition wouldn't change. But the reaction that would take place takes place at a faster rate.
Yeah.
In that case.
So that's why they're so important then.
That's why they're so important. Sometimes they do the reverse. They can slow down a reaction as well. But that is rarely, not common anyway, in industry. It happens. So this is why, if you look around, we have lots of plastics, because titanium, titanium aluminate is involved in those reactions. So we have lots of polyethylene, polypropylene. There are other polymers as well. There are loads of polymers. lots of polymers.
The modern world, you think of, well, I always think of Teflon and Kevlar and all these things that revolutionized the world, didn't they? Basically.
That's right.
You know? Fascinating. We could talk for hours, Olga, but I'm conscious you must get back to your other work, your other event.
Yes, that's been quite interesting.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, we will sit and, you know, listen out for Mercedes-Benz's progress.
Yeah, they're not saying that much about it yet, are they, to be fair?
No. They're not wanting to say too much.
No.
Well, with these types of developments, I'm sure they've put out patents already to protect
what they're doing. I bet they have. They will, because I think it's a game changer. And once they patent that and they've nailed it, they won't just be, as we said, they won't just be putting on vehicles. It'll be everywhere.
That's correct, yes.
So, you know, that could solve, to a certain degree, air pollution and lots of other things in the future, you know, in the coming years.
Hopefully so.
Hopefully so. The work will be done. Fantastic stuff, Ogo. We wish you a very Merry Christmas, sir.
Same to you
and
as well.
And a Happy New Year.
Paul for us.
Will do.
Everybody else in your studio.
Take care, Ogo. And thank you for giving us your time. Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye, Ogo.
With so many fools playing to roles, trying to impress but feeling rather empty. I had another dream. What a way to spend that evening. Turn up with their friends, playing the game. They're in the scene I should have been. Far away. Getting up and close to bed, remembering what's been before. I open the door to an empty room. Then I forget. Very much like to go out to a show. So what can I do? I can't think what to say. She sees through anyway. Moving rather slow, arriving late. There she waits, looking very angry, as cross as she can be. Getting up with us about remembering what's been before. I open the door to an empty room.
Oh, very nice track, that. Paint Box by Pink Floyd, 1967. And we played that because we were talking to Dr. Ogo Osama about solar paint and Mercedes-Benz, an interesting concept moving forward. Could be a game changer. We also touched on titanium dioxide paint because that's been around for a while. We are fast coming to the end of this very week's fast edition of the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Don't forget to join us next Saturday, and indeed the Saturday after next week. We've got Gareth Morgan in, a member and ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society, the week after with Chris Dale, talking about ultra-processed foods and lots of other things. Very quickly, the Gemini meteor shower. Go on, yes, Paul, is it tonight?
Between Friday and Sunday, depending on your time zones.
Happening now.
And specifically, the early hours of Saturday in the UK. It's some of the brightest and most abundant in the skies.
Excellent stuff. Bye-bye.